Good morning. As we said last week, it's hard to live in peace if your diet is just anxiety. So let's make sure when we're talking to people that we aren't all navel-gazing and all doom and gloom, all right? There is a lot of great things that are happening around the planet and around in people's homes and different things. So let's stay informed, but let's not just be glued in front of our TVs sucking in all the bad stuff. Right? I mean, we need to stay informed, but it's hard to be peaceful if your diet is just anxiety. So the story so far is King Xerxes has thrown this incredible feast that lasted 180 days, and then in a banquet that lasted another 7 days. And at the end of that banquet, he asked his queen Vashti to come and parade her beauty in front of the nobles, and everybody was at the feast, and she refused. And so it upset him, which it should do. And there, like we said before, there's lots of different ways of interpreting the book of Esther. And I interpret it one particular way. There's lots and lots of other ways of looking at it. Now, you can look at it just as a historical book. You can look at it all these different ways. But I love to interpret it the way that the church fathers used to look at it in this way, and so I'm in good company with some people, and it's a hotly debated way to interpret this book, but I just love it when we look at it like this. It's a whole different story. So the king then sends out this decree that he should find a bride for himself, a queen who will return honor to him. And we looked at Matthew 21, where it talks about the tenants who were thrown out of the vineyard, and the vineyard is given to somebody else who will actually return the fruit to the king, return the fruit to the vineyard owner. And so the king is looking for a bride that will bring him honor and not refuse to bring him honor. All right, and that's the whole book of Esther and how it starts. And it's this wonderful search for a bride who is more worthy than the one who will not return praise to him. So this is what we're joining the story now in Esther chapter 2. And this is what it says. But after Xerxes' anger had subsided and he began to think about Vashti and what she had done and the decree that he had made. And so he's starting to think back about this woman who he's missing as the queen. Now you can think, okay, well, he's a guy. He's thrown his woman out. Of course he's missing something. But that again, We got to remember who we're talking about. We're talking about a king. What does a king have in the Old Testament that kings don't have now, officially? In the Old Testament, what do kings have? Begins with H, ends with harem. Harem if you're from North America, or harem if you're from England. All right? So he's got a harem of people that... So he's not missing sex, to put it bluntly. All right, that's not what he's missing. And when you read this, that's what you can think. What he's missing is a queen who can rule with him in companionship. So it's not just this. Well, this is what he's missing. No, it's not. He's got a harem full of that, if that's what he's after. But he's after a deeper level of companionship, of a queen who can rule with him. And so his thoughts go that way, and then this is what it says. This is the plan. This is the incredible story that starts to unfold. So the personal attendant suggested to him, "Let us search the entire empire for beautiful young virgins for the king. Let the king appoint agents for each province to bring these beautiful young women into the royal harem and to the fortress of Susa." Haggai, the king's eunuch, remember we talked about last week what a eunuch was, makes your eyes water, was in charge of the king's harem and in charge of giving beauty treatments to these women. So the plan is this: we're going to search the kingdom for some beautiful women. Now just remember that word, beautiful. That's the word they use, beautiful women. So now we're going to skip forward because we've got to go through this quickly, all right? This is what it says in verse 5 of chapter 2. "At that time, there was a Jewish man in the fortress of Susa whose name was Mordecai," or Mordecai, depending on where you come from. I'm not going to argue about it, but it's Mordecai, all right? So that's his name, and he's from the tribe of Benjamin. right? His family had been among those who the king had brought into exile. Were brought to Babylon by King Nebuchadnezzar. This man had a very beautiful and lovely cousin, Hadassah. That's her name, Hadassah. Not Esther. Hadassah. Now remember that. And if you, and when we put the other sermon up, you'll remember that last week we told you why the book is called Esther, not Hadassah. All right? So this is what it's called. Who was also called Esther. When her father and mother had died, Mordecai adopted her and part of his family and raised her like his own daughter. As a result of the king's decree, verse 8, Esther, along with many other beautiful young women, were brought to the king's harem at the fortress of Susa and placed in Haggai's care. Haggai, now listen to this. Haggai was very impressed with her. Now, when you read that and you think it's a beautiful young girl, you think, well, of course he is. People are impressed by beauty. What was Haggai? Haggai. Haggai. However you want to pronounce it. It's Haggai, the way it's written. So what was he? Begins with U, ends with nook. A eunuch. So his level of impression is different. Do you understand that? His level of impression is different. This is not just a guy responding to primal instincts to breed. That's not what he's impressed with. And you might think, yeah, but she's very beautiful. Of course he's impressed. No, they're all beautiful. Do you understand that, right? So in the middle of all this stuff, there's something about this one girl, Hadassah, that stands out as beautiful. And there's a clue in the verse just above. It says she was beautiful and lovely. Beautiful and fair in some translations. Beautiful and can't remember the other translation what it says, but it says beautiful and fair, beautiful and lovely, and beautiful and kindly. Beautiful and kind is how it puts it. See, beauty. Remember this; it makes a great T-shirt. Beauty is a look. Loveliness is a quality. She had both. She came, there's all these beautiful women, but there's this beautiful girl who is also got this quality of loveliness. And it's like indefinable, like the loveliness. But you know when you've met people who are like that, right? You know it. You know when you've met somebody and you go away. And it's not often a term that is referred to for guys. What a lovely guy. I suppose women might say that. What a lovely guy. But a guy wouldn't generally say that about another guy. What a lovely guy. I mean, but when you've met somebody who's a lovely person, you say that about them regardless of their physical makeup. Doesn't matter what they are. You doesn't matter what they look like on the outside. You walk away and say, what a lovely person. I tell the story often about a guy called Half, which is not a lovely name, right? Half, right? He's a Brazilian guy, and it's Ralf in English, but Half if you're Brazilian. And so Ralf, Half. I was going to the Middle East. I got up a 28-hour travel journey. I was missing Miriam. I was going to be away from my family for a month and a bit, and wasn't going to see him for ages. And I got off the plane in the heat in the middle of the night, just like 42 degrees at 1 o'clock in the morning. Walked out, and as I walked out from the entrance gate, I saw a face in the crowd that I recognized, and it was Half. Ralph had come at 1 o'clock in the morning to pick me up from the airport. I thought I was going to jump in a taxi and just go back to the place I was living. And that's what I thought would happen. But this guy turned up and I said to him, what are you doing here? He said, I came to meet you. And that was it. And it's like, oh, you know, but I'm a guy, so it's, yeah, cool. Okay, so he said, I came to meet you. And I went, why? He said, I didn't want you to arrive here alone. And it's that loveliness. It's this, like, and so I mocked him when I was preaching one day. I said, everybody needs to just call him Lovely Ralph. Just call him Lovely. And people did. They said, hey, Lovely Ralph. You know, so, and that became his name. Lovely Ralph. Why? Because he had this, there was this loveliness about him. Just a big, tall guy. Just gentle-spirited guy. He had this nature, this quality that was this loveliness. And because Esther, Hadassah, has this loveliness, it says this, that Haggai cared for her. Let me ask you a question. Do you care for people who are jerks? That's a no from Heidi. All right? Okay, so do you? We generally don't, right? I mean, it's hard to care for people who are jerks. If they're rude and they're obnoxious and they're jerks all the time, you think, it's hard to care for people like that. But she has this loveliness. And because she's not bitter about the situation she's in, she exudes, it just flows out of her, this loveliness to people that she meets. And because of that, the keeper of the king's harem cares. And he puts her in the best part of the harem. You read the story when you get home. It's awesome. Like, that's homework during the week because you've got spare time on your hands. Social distancing, go home, take the book of Esther out, it's not long, and read it. Read it through two or three times during the week. And start to look at it just not as a physical story, but the spiritual story that's going on behind. And let me show you what it says. Because it's wonderful. As a result, the king's decree, he came in. Haggai was very impressed, and he treated her kindly. See, I'm not lying. He quickly ordered a special menu for her. You know, God has a special menu for you. You know that? He has exactly what you need. He has exactly what you need. And what you need is different from what I need. And what I need is different from what Miriam needs. And what John needs is different than what Anita needs. And so all these different, he has a special menu for us. And he orders us a special menu. It's just full of beauty, this book. It's incredible. With beauty treatments. You know, God, I come to God ugly. I might be physically ugly now. But he takes my ugliness of sin and beautifies it by removing it. I come to God ugly. Do you understand that? The ugliness that mars my life of sin. And he gives me these beauty treatments of salvation and restoration and redemption and all those wonderful things. And there's too many R's in there, so we'll move on. And he chose a special place for in the king's palace and put her in the special place in the harem. It tells you as you read the story that he gives her seven handmaids. Seven handmaidens. And there are seven eunuchs in charge of the harem. Ever wondered why it says that? Just when you read the story and you come across these numbers, just think, okay, why? You go back to Exodus chapter 25, and you see in there, Hezaleel and Bilal and Hezaleel are instructed to build furniture for the temple, and one of the pieces of furniture that they build is a menorah, a seven-branched candlestick. Now, I know that at Hanukkah, they have a nine-branched candlestick, but that's a different reason. The one that's in the temple is seven branches, and it represents the sevenfold spirits of God. Now, don't let that freak you out. We don't have seven gods. Right? But that's what it represents. And if you want Bible for that, you go to Isaiah chapter 11 and Revelation chapter 4. And those are there for you to read. And that's why she has seven handmaids and seven eunuchs. This is an incredibly intricately written story. And it weaves in all these different biblical references all the way through the story. And it's fascinating when you read it like this, not just as a, oh, it's history. That's all it is. It's history that's written in a particular way that draws us into what God is doing. So this is what it says. We're going to wrap this up right now. Before each young woman, in verse 12, before each young woman was taken into the king's chamber, she was given, prescribed 12 months of beauty treatment, 6 months of oil of myrrh. There's myrrh. It's not even Christmas, and we're at myrrh, right? 6 months of oil with myrrh, followed by 6 months of special perfumes and ointments. When it was time for her to go into the king's palace, she was given her choice of whatever clothing and jewelry that she wanted to take from the harem. That evening, she would be taken to the king's private rooms, and the next morning, she was brought into the second harem, a different place in the palace, where the king's wives lived. Okay? Zoom down then to the end of verse 15. When it was Esther's turn to go into the king's, to be with the king, she accepted the advice of Haggai, the eunuch in charge of the harem. She asked for nothing except for what he suggested. I don't want to bring anything to God that the Holy Spirit doesn't want me to. You understand what's written here? She goes to the keeper of the king's harem and says, what should I take? Now, if I was her, as a young girl, who's been taken captive, basically from my family by force, taken to the king's palace, going to be subjected to all this treatment so that I'm beautified to form a person who is basically going to be used by the king. That's what it looks like if you read the words on the page. I might be full of bitterness and anger and resentment about the position that I've been put in. She isn't. She says, beautify me. Make me look good. And then she says, what should I take into the king? Now, there's a number of things that come to your mind, like a dart gun to put him to sleep, body armor. Dress yourself from head to foot. This is a girl who's been taken from her home to perform a purpose for this guy. And a taser would be nice, mace. But she doesn't ask for this. She only takes what the keeper of the harem tells her to take. And it says this about her, that she was admired by everyone. Not just the guys. You understand that? Like her attitude, the way that she wants to be presented to the king brings admiration from every single person that she meets. Everybody, everyone admires this girl. Everybody. Now, what's that got to do with me in Pemberton in the 21st century? Well, I'm not being abducted to be put in a harem. But my world has gone through some very non-subtle changes over the last few months, as all of us are. Has. And there's different ways that I can react to that. I can just shut off and withdraw and be bitter and twisted and angry, like somebody posted, I wasn't expecting to give up this much for Lent. You know, like you think, oh yeah, I understand that, right? Like, I wasn't expecting to give this much for Lent. I could be angry and bitter, or I can say to God, God, what do you want me to take out of this? How do I serve the king in this? How do I, in this bad situation, how do I ask the Holy Spirit, beautify me? Beautify me. Now, and this is very strange for me to say, and it almost makes me feel uncomfortable saying it out loud as a guy. I want to be presented to my king in manly loveliness. It's not a phrase that comes easy to me because I'm a guy. But I want to be presented to my king in manly, Holy Spirit loveliness. I want to please my king. I want to please him out how I react in circumstances that are not optimal. I want to please him how I react to other people around me. I want to take his advice. And me and Mark and John were talking this morning, okay, how do we react? What's our response to this? How do we do social distancing and continue to operate as a church? How do we do those things? How do we have Thursday night prayer, which we will have? We forgot to say that this morning. 7:30, we'll do this. We'll spread out around the room. We can walk around the room and pray, all right? Because if ever there was a time that people need to be meeting to pray, it's now, all right? So we'll be open Thursday night, 7:30 till 8:30, for a time of prayer. Have the hand washing stuff at the back and all the social distancing. We can do that. So we're going to be praying. I want to be presented to my King in manly loveliness. That's what my desire is. And as I read this story, that's what I read. And if you're a lady, you want to be presented to the King of Kings in feminine loveliness. In loveliness. My King is not a drunk. My King is not a tyrant. My King is not an abuser. He's the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And I want to be presented to him in manly loveliness. Esther could not do that on her own. You understand that? She was given to the care of the people in charge of the beauty treatments. And God gives us into the care of the Holy Spirit to beautify us, to present us to the King. And my challenge to us this morning is this. How do we submit ourselves to the Holy Spirit so that he can beautify us to look good for our King? Stand with me if you will, please.